Coming up on Tech News Today, Google Maps. Coming up on Tech News Today, Google Maps returns to the iPhone. Rim gets a second chance from ICE and Dropbox. Getting into the music biz? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, the 13th of December, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT12. And they recently launched a developer platform for complete code control. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And Chris Mill will be joining us to discuss the stories of the day in a moment, but let's start with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Google Maps triumphantly returned to the iOS platform last night with a new Google Maps for iPhone app. Rave reviews and virtual crowds of cheering masses greeted the app as it navigated the Apple approval process and rocketed to the top of the free app charts. A new API will also allow developers of other iOS apps to integrate Google Maps.
I don't want to top that. I don't think I can. Bloomberg reports that Sprint Nextel has made an offer to acquire all of Clearwire.
And people cheered.
No, nobody cheered. Well, Clearwire might be cheering because the offer's for $2.1 billion. Sprint already owns more than 50% of Clearwire. Now, the deal would end a four-year joint venture between the two companies. Clearwire wasn't a profitable company, but it does own a bunch of spectrum that Sprint could use to build out its network.
Remember last October when U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement announced that it would switch more than 17,000 employees from BlackBerries to iPhones? Remember how everybody started to measure rim for a coffin? Well, fighting Thorsten Hines is having none of that. They just got ICE to backtrack a tiny bit and agree to test BlackBerry 10 smartphones and enterprise service early next year, meaning Apple better not fill those iPhone orders quite yet.
It's over. Dell is now out of the smartphone business globally. The company left the U.S. market this year but continued to sell phones in China. Jeff Clark, the head of Dell's consumer business, said that the company would not re-enter the smartphone game and that the company could not find a way to build a business on Android. Clark said he's optimistic on the long-term prospects of the PC business.
Amazon brought its instant video app to the iPad in August, but oddly, not to the iPhone or the iPod Touch until today. Subscribers to Amazon Prime will get access to all the streaming titles in Amazon's library, and all the peoples of the United States, anyway, will be able to buy and rent stuff on the tiny screens, if that's what you want. You can only AirPlay sound, though.
It looks like Dropbox is going to have some sweet music sharing features in the future because Dropbox just picked up the three-man team behind Audio Galaxy. Now, Audio Galaxy runs a service that allows you to access your home music library via the web and from apps. The blog post announcing the deal makes it seem as though the deal is an acqui-hire and not necessarily Dropbox picking up Audio Galaxy as a whole.
John McAfee, founder of McAfee Security, master of disguise and international fugitive, is coming home. The 67-year-old was released from custody of the Guatemalan police and flown to Miami, where federal officials greeted him and ushered him away. McAfee said, quote, compared to my past two wives that expelled me, this isn't a terrible trip.
That's an actual quote.
It is an actual quote. McAfee is wanted for questioning in Belize regarding the shooting of his next-door neighbor there.
Take my charges, please. Today, the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission will vote on whether yellow cab drivers can use smartphone apps like Uber to find fares. Current TLC rules do not allow payment through third-party systems like Uber. According to TLC Commissioner David Yasky, the payment systems would need some adjustments, like being integrated with the meter to prevent overcharging. The vote is expected to pass.
At 1:30 a.m., delegates at the World Conference on International Telecommunications apparently agreed that the ITU should take a role in the internet. The U.S., Europe, and others opposed the resolution. ITU Secretary General Hamadoun Touré previously said no majority votes would be taken to change the 1988 telecom treaty at issue. Summit Chairman Mohamed Nasser Al-Ghanim claimed it was not a vote, but the, quote, feel of the room, Any proposed treaty would have to be ratified by national governments, and the United States Congress passed a resolution last week stating the internet should remain free from government control.
Apple's win streak in court just ended. Patent licensing firm Mobile Media Ideas convinced a federal jury that Apple misappropriated protected technology for handheld devices. One patent is for the camera phone, and others cover call handling and call rejection. U.S. District Judge Sue L. Robinson hasn't yet scheduled a trial on damages.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast, easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. You can use Squarespace to make pretty much any website you can think of. And the nice thing about it is you don't have to do a lot of thinking about it. Squarespace does all the hard work for you, everything you need to create an exceptional website. They've got beautiful templates that you can use, and just you just pick one and customize it to your heart's content. You know, choose a little bit of the layout, change the colors, and then you just drag and drop. Put your images in there. You can create an online gallery in a snap, and they process images into multiple sizes so that when you upload one image, it turns it into seven images, so it looks great on any device, whether people got iPhones, iPads, Nexus 7s. Doesn't matter the size of the device. That new rumored 6-inch Galaxy Note, it's going to look great on it, and Squarespace is fast and easy to use. Exceptionally well-designed templates. You don't have to take our word for it, though. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account, no credit card needed, just try it out, start building your website. Then if you decide to purchase it, use offer code TNT12 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That's squarespace.com. Use offer code TNT12, everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, Christopher Null, editor of the Intuit Small Business Blog at blog.intuit.com. Welcome back to the show, Chris. Good to have you, man.
Good morning, fellas. Great to be here. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. I see you decided not to go with the Santa hat.
I'm wearing it. You just can't see it.
You're wearing it on the inside.
I'm keying it out.
Festive.
Literally.
Much more festive headset.
Let's start with that Google Maps for iPhone coming, bringing you traffic, turn-by-turn nav, transit and walking directions, which the Apple version of the map does not have, satellite view, street view, the benefits of signing in with a Google account if you want them. Vector graphics means faster load times, less data used. There is no offline maps feature yet in this, although it will cache your route. You can shake the app. That's a new thing to send corrections or feedback. You just do a little shake and it'll say, oh, you want to send us feedback? And I'm like, no, I was just shaking it, so I dismissed it. URL schema is being rolled out as part of an API. Links to Google Maps from other apps will take you to this Google Maps app. Or it could take you to the App Store if you don't have it. Or the developer can decide to go ahead and launch Apple Maps if Google Maps is not installed. And then there's a full API for third parties to include Google Maps in their apps on iPhone. Daniel Graff, director of Google Maps for Mobile, said the goal is parity between iOS and Android. Have you tried it out, Chris?
I have. I downloaded it last night. I had to take a walk just to see how awesome it was. And now I know what I've been missing. Being an iPhone user all this time, Android's guys got it great.
Well, and that's the idea, is they just wanted Google Maps to work like Google Maps everywhere. Some people have complained that it doesn't seem like everything that used to be available on Google Maps is in here. I think that's because what it used to do was take the web maps and include them in the app. And this is a native app. It's built from the ground up. So essentially what you've got is a different look at things. For one thing, I noticed, Ayaz, that when you just look at a location, it doesn't seem to have all of the businesses and everything until you zoom farther in. And I think that's because it's on the iPhone. Remember, you can double pixel it and use it on an iPad, but it's not actually built for the iPad. It's built for the iPhone.
If you've got any experience with Android devices or playing with that navigation, I have a Nexus 7 and I tested it out as a GPS. Same look and feel. It's pretty smooth. I really like the way it works. I was expecting it to be a little, I guess, I want to say buggier, but it's not. It's the full, full-blown application that's fantastic, I think, right now. If you're using the Android experience, you'll know how this works right away. There's some features in here like, I don't know, accuracy. That's nice. I mean, that's an underrated thing. But one of the, I got to say, I love this. When I brought up the app, it actually found the last place I searched directions for.
Because you logged in.
I logged in.
Right? That's one of the benefits.
It had that built in. I was like, this is great. I don't need to do this copy and paste thing that I always do But I search for Google. I get the address. I put in my GPS app. I can just do it on the web, and it'll show up over there. Makes it a lot simpler.
Now, Daniel Graff went to great lengths in many interviews that I read to say that they did not artificially delay putting out this app. A lot of people were suspecting they wanted to just make Apple look bad for dropping them. He said, we worked as fast as we could to make a very good app. And that's one of the reasons things like offline maps are not yet available. However, as fast as they put this out, they only started it earlier this year. They had to have known that Apple was going to drop Google Maps from iOS 6. Chris, do you buy that there was really nothing, no other calculations in the delay in getting this app?
This is a pretty sophisticated app. I don't think that Google was trying to delay, and I don't really see what the big advantage of doing that would have been to them either. It's in their best interest to get the app out as quickly as possible, but make sure that it works. I mean, look at what happened to Apple when they put out a buggy map app. If Google did the same thing, it would be it'd be panic and rioting in the streets.
I wonder if
you could find the streets.
I wonder if there was going to be any delay. I'd imagine it'd be to have a full API ready, because they want other developers to use their app instead of the native app that's on iOS. But other than that, I mean, it seems like Chris was saying, it makes the most sense for Google to get this app out as soon as possible.
Why didn't they start developing it earlier?
Well,
the thing is, the time scale he gave from when they start working on it till this app coming out is actually very accelerated, and they did a great job in that amount of time.
One of the older reports had said that Apple had left the contract a year before it was set to expire. And then that's why Google wasn't working on this right away, because they figured they had a year before they had to even get up to speed. Apple pulled out, and then Google's sitting around.
But we all knew they were leaving before, like, May of this year.
Well, contracts.
And Google must have known.
Well, maybe Apple acted like Apple, and they just flat out said, we got 30 days notice. Go for it.
Or, yeah, maybe Google was like, we're not sure we believe you. So, yeah.
What about
there's probably some issues with Apple perhaps not permitting this app on the App Store after they switched over anyway. So when was that really clear that was going to happen? I didn't really hear about Google Maps until after the fallout from Apple Maps, and they said, look, use somebody else. There's other alternatives, and here's some more. Go get to Google quickly.
Yeah, and Google's, I think I did read a quote, I can't remember if it was from Graff, where they said the approval was never an issue. They knew that because other Maps apps were allowed, that Apple never made any kind of noise that they wouldn't allow it. But it was a question for us because we didn't know that. Let's talk about Dell getting out of the smartphone business. Yeah. Dell was in the smartphone business?
Exactly.
That's everybody's joke. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, chat room.
I thought I'd get that out of the way.
Thank you for doing that, because that joke is currently going on. If you remember, Dell had smartphones. They had the, what's called the Streak. They've had a bunch of phones out there for a while, but they've announced that they're leaving the smartphone business, at least on the consumer side, says Jeff Clark. He's the head of consumer business at Dell. He said that so far, we couldn't find a way to build a business on Android. It doesn't mean we're not looking at Android. You should come and see what we have in our labs. So it doesn't look like they're totally leaving Android. He says he's optimistic at the long-term prospects of the PC business. But on the smartphone side, he says Dell's going to try to be the preferred BYOD provider of solutions in the marketplace. So it looks like it's about management, apparently, of the devices, not necessarily providing the devices themselves, because Dell apparently could not make this work. They've tried. Chris, do you think this is a wise decision by Dell, or are they ignoring the future? Because they make PCs, and if they're going to bank on PCs and Windows 8 tablets to be the future, is this a smart move?
I think it's both. I think it's a wise decision, and it's ignoring the future. I mean, I think Dell is really recognizing its present and past, in that it has just never made money on mobile products. It's not a mobile company. And I'll give either of you a dollar if you can remember the name of the PDA line they had for 5 years in the 2000s.
Look at this.
That's right. Nobody remembers. And
DJ.
You know, they've lost.
No,
not the
DJ. That was the music player. Never mind.
I bet the chat room will have it. But
Axum.
Right. And I got it from the chat room. All credit due.
They just don't know mobility. They don't miniaturize products. They have some great corporate laptops and corporate desktops, and enterprise is where they've been at. And I think for them to try to get into the Android space now in a big way, which is fragmented and dominated by some really big companies, I think it's kind of wise of them to say, look, we know we're not going to succeed here. We need to bow out for now.
If Dell couldn't make it, you know, have a go at this, HP announced they're going to have a smartphone next year, or at earliest would be next year. Should HP be looking at what Dell's doing and go, wait a second, if Dell couldn't make it work, and they've tried it several times, and HP's tried it several times, should these traditional PC manufacturers kind of go, that's not our space?
It reminds me of our conversation from yesterday about Microsoft and the fact that what these companies that have really banked on PCs are doing is looking at Apple and IBM and trying to pick which direction they want to go. Do we want to be like IBM and become an enterprise solutions provider because we have all these relationships with the enterprise from providing desktops and move that direction? That seems to be what Dell's indicating here. We're going to be the provider of a solution for bring your own devices, but not actually the provider of the devices. On the other end, on the other side, there's Apple, which is a company that went from desktops to becoming one of the most successful companies in the world by providing those devices, those mobile devices that everybody wants. Google is over there in a weird situation where they don't actually provide any devices. You know, Motorola aside, which is sort of firewalled off, they provide the platform. So what I see with Dell is them sort of inching away from that becoming that device market provider and seeing if it makes sense to become a solutions provider, whereas HP just seems to kind of keep going back and forth. Like, oh, we're going to be a solutions provider. No, we're going to be a device provider. Oh, we're going to kill the tablet line, but we might come back with a smartphone. I mean, Chris, is it that stark of a choice, or can a company do both of these things?
Companies can reinvent themselves. I think HP's problem is they have a new CEO every 6 months, so they don't know. They keep changing their mind because they have new leadership. Dell is a different animal, and I think you're right. I think the IBM versus Apple comparison is really apt. If I was Dell, though, I would much rather be trying to sell a few dozen multi-million dollar contracts to manage enterprise data and enterprise devices rather than trying to sell a few million $100 devices to every consumer on the block who already has an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy. But I think you're right. I mean, companies do reinvent themselves. Apple did it many years ago. But who else? You know, what other great examples do you have of companies that have really managed to succeed in this space? Samsung, maybe. The number of examples of companies that have succeeded in making a big transition like that are very small. And Dell has tried several times. HP has tried several times. They're not doing it. I don't think they have anywhere to go right now.
Somebody in the chat room suggested Dell just buy a phone company. I think HP tried that.
Yeah,
didn't
that's
work
HP.
Out. I've said a bunch of times, I think Dell and RIM makes a lot of sense because if they're going to do a solution provider, have all that back end, RIM's got that settled. They got that figured out.
And RIM's got the relationship with the enterprise.
Yeah, so I think that might be the idea for the future, but Dell's not going to be doing it in-house anymore.
Let's talk about Sprint, which is finally taking over Clearwire. Bloomberg reports SoftBank-backed Sprint Nextel offering $2.1 billion, that's $2.90 a share, to the remaining shareholders of Clearwire. Sprint is a majority owner in Clearwire right now. They bought out the shares from Craig O. McCaw in late October, which gave them a majority share. Craig McCaw was one of the co-founders of Clearwire before Sprint was even involved. Sprint would also provide $800 million of interim financing to keep Clearwire afloat. Now, this has got to be approved by SoftBank. It's got to be approved by Clearwire's board, obviously, and it's got to be approved by the FCC. But this is a spectrum grab for Sprint, no doubt about it. They are looking to take that Clearwire spectrum and be able to more easily do whatever they want with it in rolling out LTE. They are trying to retire iDEN, which gives them a little more spectrum. Is this just a spectrum grab, or can Sprint continue on that early promise of Clearwire? Clearwire is going to be sort of a wholesale provider and say, you know, we'll be the platform upon which other people can build mobile businesses. Chris, what do you think?
I don't think this is anything more than spectrum. Again, Clearwire now is already becoming data technology. Sprint is now third and a half tier player in the mobile space. This is kind of a quick effort to do something to kind of become competitive, at least, and it's probably a good decision for them.
I mean, Sprint already owned 50% of the company. They obviously they have an interest in it. It seems like, I mean, it's not profitable. Maybe they figure if they can take it within its own, if they own entirely, they can reduce the costs of Clearwire. make it a more profitable division if they're going to do that, or use the infrastructure that's in place with Clear, because they have a bunch of contracts available with, I believe, Freedom Pops running on them and a whole bunch of other, of these new hotspot services. It would just bolster Sprint up, because Sprint has been licensing things out for a long time, and they have lots of subdivisions. It seems to be the right move for Sprint.
I worry for consumers that SoftBank is looking at this as, let's get rid of this Clearwire weirdness, let's bring all that spectrum into Sprint, and let's make a run at AT&T and Verizon, which arguably is what they should do. But I like that idea of somebody being that platform, and I hope that SoftBank doesn't get rid of that because they think that it's a disadvantage to be enabling all of these MVNOs out there.
I mean, I really don't think SoftBank's going to try to do that. I would hope they, what you're saying, Tom, that they want to stay as that platform, because that's the only way Sprint's going to succeed. Because Verizon's got the network, AT&T's got some kind of speed, but Sprint needs some kind of hook.
SoftBank likes being the challenger, though. They like shooting for the top, so we will have to see. Meantime, Dropbox starting to rock and roll, getting into music biz.
Yeah, I saw the story this morning, and I was excited and also scared, because Audio Galaxy was the service I used to use. Now, Audio Galaxy was acquired by Dropbox in some form. The blog post that Audio Galaxy posted today said that the team is joining Dropbox, and as a part of the transition, Audio Galaxy will no longer accept new signups. Now, Audio Galaxy, the team behind Audio Galaxy worked on things like FolderShare, which Microsoft acquired, turned it into LiveSync. So they've had some experience with some, you know, cloud management when it comes to that. If you go to the Audio Galaxy site, you can't sign up anymore. And it's the word transition that makes people think that it's an acqui-hire. So the question is, if Dropbox is building music services with the Audio Galaxy team, Chris, what do you want to see out of it? There's a lot of different cloud services out there for music. What would be a killer hook for Dropbox?
I don't know if there's a killer hook. I think there are some decent hooks. I mean, it'd be great if you can park all your music on Dropbox and access it anywhere, play it. I mean, that's kind of one of the parts of what Audio Galaxy did, letting you access your music from anywhere. I mean, Dropbox, access your files from anywhere. This seems like kind of a natural thing. But then throw on internet radio or streaming services on top of that. You know, maybe it's just a little value add for Dropbox users that you can get another $5 a month out of them for. Then you don't, you know, you convince them you only have to use one service to get file sync, online cloud storage, and music all in one. It's kind of a neat idea. I don't know if it's going to be earth shaking, but it's, you know, I'm interested.
I don't think that this is going to turn into a music service. I would love it to turn into a music service. I am looking for that music service that lets me take all of the files that I have, put them in a folder in the cloud, access them from all of my devices, and manage them with a playlist. Nobody does that perfectly. There's lots of people who do parts of that, but there's always some restriction like, oh, we don't allow anything over 60 seconds, or, oh, we have to match it. If we don't match it, we don't allow it. But this is so fraught with peril when you take on the music industry. I just don't see Dropbox taking that risk. I see this as an acqui-hire, as a way to get some really good talent, some people that really know how to do good stuff, and bring it in. That said, they surprised me when they did the photos thing, and they've become a contender for managing your photos. So there's, you know, that 12% of me that thinks, well, maybe there's still a chance that Dropbox does get into music. Maybe they do take it on.
Well, Dropbox has been building tools that when you go to the web, you can have like a video player. You can look at your videos a lot easier. They have better photo management when it comes to that. If they had a really killer like music player, I'm assuming what they're going to do is have a very similar setup to Audio Galaxy, such that you still have a server running at your house. That way you're not putting anything on their servers. But if you want to pay extra for that to upload it to them, you could do that. So the thing is kind of mix the two services together without having you upload everything.
Yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting thing to watch. See what Dropbox ends up doing with it. Meanwhile, RIM is back in the game. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement saying, okay, we'll begin a pilot program on the BlackBerry 10 smartphone. It looks kind of nifty. We'll trial out BlackBerry Enterprise Server 10 next year, early next year. RIM said that ICE will be among the first government organizations to pilot the new solution. Now, remember, as I mentioned in the news fuse, they had decided at immigration in the U.S. to switch 17,600 employees to the iPhone back in October. In November, however, BlackBerry announced that the BlackBerry 10 had been granted FIPS. That's Federal Information Processing Standard 140-2. That certifies the product for use by government agencies and regulated industries in the United States and Canada. Barbara Gonzalez, press secretary for ICE, said the agency's BlackBerry 10 pilot program does not mean the company is reversing its October decision about iPhones, but ICE is looking to develop new mobile apps for law enforcement, and so they want to evaluate BlackBerry 10, see if it could provide a platform for those apps. So we may end up with a mixed solution here where ICE does start to order some iPhones, but gives RIM a shot. Chris, is this RIM's chance to claw their way back into the game?
I think if I was RIM, I would be desperate to put out any press release I possibly could right now to prove that somebody was still interested in my products. This is wishful thinking like I've never seen. A pilot project with one government agency, which has already said it's going to be rolling out tens of thousands of iPhones. I don't see much ever coming of this except for, you know, maybe a few good drinks at the RIM holiday party. Like, oh, don't you? Next year is going to be a great one. Yeah.
But IaaS isn't a press release with even that shred of hope better than no press release with no shred of hope?
It's definitely better. But I think RIM's got that inertia, right? RIM's been, BlackBerry devices have been a government favorite for a very long time because RIM's been about security from the very beginning. So I don't think government agencies like to do a lot of changes anyways. For them to reevaluate their plans, they go, oh, we'll go to this new platform, iPhones, and then go, wait a second, there's actually a chance that we don't have to change anything? Oh, let's do that. I think it could be the beginning of something bigger. I do think it will lead to drinks at the Christmas party. But
what doesn't?
It's like yay for us. But I think that RIM is, I don't know if it's clawing its way back so much as that they're not losing all the ground that they had in the first place. So they're trying to just stay.
If you look at the RIM stock price, you'll see that there's actually been quite a bit of movement in the positive direction. Part of that is the fact that even though these press releases, as Chris Reisley points out, are very small and they are probably only like super celebrated within RIM, there haven't been a lot of negatives lately. There hasn't been people saying, hey, I got to look at BlackBerry 10 and man, is it a stinker. People are like, hey, look at that. Leaks BlackBerry 10 looks pretty awesome. ICE is like, well, maybe we will consider it. So, right. None of these things are definitive, but they're all trending in the right direction. And the fact that they got FIPS 140-2, I think, is probably lost on me as well as everybody else how important that is. The people I know who work in government-related industry point to this stuff a lot when they're frustrated about what they can't use. So this is a big advantage for RIM. Chris, now that I've put all that package together, does it look any more hopeful, or are you still where you were a few minutes ago?
I think perhaps one extra drink at the Christmas party. Hopeful, yeah. I mean, but if you're at RIM, that's all you have is hope.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to be hopeful. You do want to hope that this project works out, that the government's going to keep your products around. But even that is not really a sign of something that you can pin your future on. If the government is your biggest client, you know, that's not exactly a progressive environment to be in.
It works for Lockheed.
Look at how long Windows XP has been around in government and environments. You know, it's not even if this one organization takes on BlackBerry 10, I mean, how many will still be stuck with older versions of BlackBerry?
But the hope is that somebody sees that and then moves on, and there's a cascade effect.
That and the wireless carriers are, you know, hoping that RIM does well because they don't want to get pushed around by Samsung and Apple that are just the big dogs. That say, yeah, whatever you want, you do what we want because we have the biggest phones. They want another competitor out there. So it seems like if the government's behind RIM and then the wireless carrier's like, hey, we need a third partner, they might have a chance.
Well, it is a new hope for RIM in any case, but it's still too early to tell if Thorsten Hines is the chosen one whose coming was foretold. We'll have to wait till after the first of the year for that. Let's finish up with a Samsung strategy officer who is likely not to work there anymore after the publicity around this statement. I don't know. Maybe they'll keep him on. But.
Well, there's like one line out of context that looks gigantically bad.
Yeah.
This is Samsung's chief strategy officer, Young Soon. He's in the news. He spoke to MIT's Technology Review, and he says at work he uses Samsung products. But at home, he uses a Mac, an iPhone, and an iPad. As well as a Galaxy. I didn't say which Galaxy, but he does use that. Now, there's a reason for this. He says that the ecosystem that Apple has is sticky. He likes the idea that he can have his photos and contacts synced. His family can see it in Korea when he's away. Everything just kind of works. He didn't say the just works part. I'm saying that part. But he did say that was what he liked. Now, the reason why he was talking about this at all is because he's a part of Samsung's strategy. He says that Samsung has traditionally been a device company. But the future for Samsung is to focus on how it manages the data that comes out of these devices. He wants to make sure that Samsung has something in the future, something like that. And on the question of competitors overtaking Samsung, he recalled something Andy Grove at Intel told him. He said, Grove told him, only the paranoid survive. Then someone said, Samsung is highly paranoid. So they're trying to figure out how to keep up with their competitors. Now, Samsung's been building out its services ecosystem thing for a while. You know, they have some cloud services. They offer some partnerships with Dropbox. They have a whole bunch of different things going on. Can it truly compete in that space when there's all of these options on Android, Chris? Or do you think that this is something they can actually do?
My number one question is, has he considered the BlackBerry 10? Because
it's great.
I have heard about the FIPS 2, and that's where the future is. Now, seriously, doesn't this sound a little bit like Sony strategy to you? Let's put a lot of services and a lot of management over what is basically a commodity in Android and see where we get.
Yes.
Anyone else?
As soon as you said that, immediately they look the same. And the problem is, in both cases, Sony with Windows and now with Android is trying to control the ecosystem on top of somebody else's platform. And that's what Samsung's doing as well. What Apple does is control the device and the platform. So if Samsung wants to do that, they're going to have to control the device and the platform if they want to do exactly that same thing. Otherwise, you get all these Samsung messaging systems and Samsung music systems that nobody pays attention to, not because they aren't good, but because everybody's like, well, why would I do that when all of my other friends are on these Android stuff? And if I'm going to be in the Android universe, I want to use the Android stuff.
Well, I mean, Samsung, they introduced this new Premiere Suite upgrade to the S3. It's coming out next year. They have an easy mode that's supposed to make it a little easier to use Android devices. I could see Samsung skinning their devices like they have been in the past, so they could make these services a little bit more accessible and easier.
That's my point. You skin it, right. Mm-hmm. And suddenly everybody goes, oh, it's a skin. Oh, I need to get rid of that. Oh, totally. I hate the skin because it looks different than the other Androids.
Yeah, it's almost like it doesn't matter how good your service is, because if you're bundling it in the way that Samsung kind of has so far, at least on the Android side, it just comes across as kind of like bulk junk. Junk that's loaded on your phone that you kind of don't want there in the first place. Some people use it. I'm not saying that there aren't people that use that kind of stuff, but the majority of people, I would imagine, see that and just kind of lump it into that category, that icon that's always on the home screen that you just don't use.
See, I think that would be true of the old versions of Android. I think the S3 is so big and so popular that it's appealing to the masses at this point, so they could get away with that. People are thinking, like, I'm an Android user, so I don't want the skin. They're like, I want an S3 because it's cool.
No, but what they're thinking is, it's a Google phone, and I want Google Music,
right?
And I want Gmail, and
Google Music is the streaming service that I want to tie into because it's supported by Google. Samsung's kind of a siphoned, smaller part of that. Even though they have a large user base, it's different.
I think they got a chance. They talked about actually syncing their things with their refrigerators. I'm not even making that one up.
I would agree with you if it weren't a chance. Is not what they're after. They're after control,
right.
You know. And let's be honest. Chief Strategy Officer Young Son is not going to get fired because he said that he likes the Apple interface, because he's saying, I like this Apple universe, and we think there's something there that we would like to do that's like that. The danger there is sounding like, hey, we're Samsung and we always rip off Apple. Not that, right. You know, that he's betraying his company. But to control the ecosystem, you have to control the ecosystem. And no matter what we've said here, it's always been, but there's also this other thing. There's also this other thing. You can't have Samsung kicking things off the Android platform because they compete with Samsung features, the way Apple can kick things out of the App Store because they compete with Apple features. Am I right?
Well, as long as they don't
Go
lock
ahead,
out
say
other
it,
companies.
Ayaz.
I'll say
he's right.
If they can lock out everybody else, then they'll be fine, just like Apple does. But I don't think they're going to lock out everybody
that's
else.
That's the problem. They can't really, yeah.
It's because
yeah.
They're intelligent enough to not lock out everybody.
Well, you know what? Chris Null was talking before the show about wearing a Santa hat. So I think we should turn to the randomizer for some holiday cheer.
Randomizer.
NORAD has been tracking Santa since December 24th, 1955, when there weren't even NORAD yet. They were the Continental Air Defense Command, and they started getting calls from children about Santa Claus because a department store had accidentally printed the wrong phone number, and it was the freaking CONAD phone number. So, gosh, bless Director of Operations Colonel Harry Shoup, who just started having staff check the radar for signs of St. Nick, and a tradition was created. NORAD has tracked Santa every year since. And for the past 5 years, Google Maps has provided a way to track Santa. But this year, Bing is tracking Santa. Bing Maps will do the Santa tracking, and a company called Cesium? Did I have that wrong? Is doing the 3D maps. Yeah, Cesium. C-E-S-I-U-M. So Santa going a little corporate here, Chris.
Hey, he's got to make a buck.
He's got to pay for all those toys.
Yeah, he's got to pay for all those toys, exactly.
Does he have the FIPS certification? That's the question.
Yeah, there's a great article from Danny Sullivan going into all of the things that NORAD has been doing to partner. So they amicably have parted with Google. They said it was a mutual decision. Google is still involved with YouTube. There's a YouTube NORAD channel for Santa tracking. There's also a Google Plus page. But this thing is full of partnerships, you know, Facebook links, Twitter links. There is no Google Plus link, I noted. You're just bah humbug.
To talk about that robot that stretches with the muscles and everything. Oh my God, we got Santa. Take that. But yes, well, nice that Santa's doing this. If there was a robot involved, I'd be way more excited.
Robo Santa
would I'd be all over that.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the calendar.
Today, the Kindle store with iOS and Android apps launched in China. Also today, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act, COM Act, is officially in effect today. That means ads and promos are required to remain on par with the average audio levels of scheduled programming.
So on television.
On television, right.
Not on the internet.
No. The internet's a whole other game. So you'll be listening to your audio, and then you won't hear the yelling like that. So tomorrow, December 14th, China gets the iPhone 5. Also tomorrow, support for the Messages beta app on macOS 10 Lion will be pulled.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We have messages.
A message from James Burns. He says, "Hey guys, on Freedom Pop's new home Wi-Fi, I think it's a great deal. I just pre-ordered it for my mother-in-law. She only really checks email, so 1 gigabyte a month is all she needs. This will give her free home internet. Even if she goes higher, it means $10 per month. That's super cheap for her. And as far as where it's available, she's in Sacramento, hardly a limited area."
Chris, have you heard about Freedom Pop's in-home thing?
No, this is new to me.
So they give you a WiMAX receiver that you put in your house. It's got Ethernet connections, and you get it, and you pay $89 for it, and then it's free for up to a gigabyte a month.
Hmm. Well, I can see it for a minimal user, that'd not be a bad deal.
Yeah.
But is there overage system involved?
They just wind you down, but you can pay. You can say, oh, okay, I'll pay $10 for a month and get 10 gigabytes and go up from there. Oh. Yeah. That's pretty interesting. Also got an email from Dwayne, who says, "In your discussion of Apple's policy regarding Microsoft and other developers incorporating purchases and subscriptions into their app, appropriately, you mentioned the seeming inflexible nature of Apple's position. However, I don't think you did justice to the counterposition in this consumer-friendly age. I, for one, am more likely to make purchases in an app if it is tied to my Apple account, because it means I don't have to re-enter my credit card on a third-party site that I have not fully vetted. Also, it makes management of my purchases easier, since I only have to review my Apple Store account, and if any problems arise, I only have to deal with Apple customer service, which historically has been rated better than other retailers. It is the same reason I prefer to shop via Amazon and why it is a benefit for resellers to sell their goods at Amazon. I assume that Amazon also has a significant revenue sharing agreement with resellers whose goods are purchased on Amazon's website by consumers using their Amazon accounts. Just thought that perhaps the pressure should be less on Apple to change its policy and more pressure placed on developers to allow the in-app purchasing using Apple accounts, since it offers a tangible user benefit." Do you think that's a good defense, Chris? We were talking specifically about things like Audible and Amazon's Kindle and those sort of situations.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the customer is always right. It doesn't matter if you're offline or online, right?
I don't know. I worked in a bookstore where they said the customer really is not always right. Be nice to them,
But
or your boss is always right. Disagree with your boss.
Sometimes they're wrong. But yeah, no, I know, you know, customer satisfaction is important. And I think Dwayne makes a really compelling argument here. My only thing is that we're not talking about in-app purchases when you talk about Amazon Kindle per se, right? What they're prevented from doing is linking out to their own store. If Amazon was trying to put a store in the app, then that would make sense to me. It's like, hey, I'm buying it in the app. It downloads to the app. It's an in-app purchase. It should go through Apple. But what Apple's saying is, no, you can't link to things. You can't launch the browser and have somebody buy something over there. And that's what bugs me.
Yeah, the thing about Apple, I think this is an interesting approach that they had in the beginning when you had smaller developers. When you have these monstrously large companies that can figure out the infrastructure to set up payment structures, that's when they start getting this argument of, 70-30? Why is it 70-30? So if Microsoft can push around Apple to get a different cut, I'm sure there are other companies that have tried this. Maybe it would start a trend.
Believe me, Microsoft is not going to get Apple to give them a different
Amazon
cut.
Amazon couldn't do it.
It's just not going to happen. All right, that's it for the show. Chris Knoll, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thanks, fellas. Good to be on the show.
Let folks know what you're up to on the internets and where they can find you.
Well, I'm all over the internets, but you can check me out at blog.intuit.com. We're writing about small business technology and FIPS-140.2.
You love that, don't you?
I love it. I hope that's going to be the name of the show.
Well, it is now. Chris Knoll, he's blowing up the internets. You can also submit stories for our consideration at technewstoday.reddit.com. It's the place to go to vote on the stories that you would like us to see. It's you know, we're not a democracy, but we like Facebook. We look at what you vote. We take it into account. Open mic submissions are now closed. Just as a reminder, the submissions are going to be sifted through this afternoon, and a few folks will be contacted today. Our open mic episode records this coming Monday, December 17th at 9 a.m. Pacific time. And if you don't know what it is, we invite a few people from the audience on the show to chat with us about technology. And that is it for us. You'll find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We've got Hack 5. Not only Darren Kitchen, but Shannon Morse joining us tomorrow. I'll be live from Santa Monica, California. See you then. We'll